outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain.
I'm in Denver, Colorado. Sarah and I have come here for a week to hang out with my son and his girlfriend and enjoy a little bit of time, a little vacation together, celebrating our 44th anniversary, which is what brought us out here. And now we're in Arvada, just outside Denver. And I'm sitting here with some friends. Kyle, you've been on the podcast before, haven't you?
I have been, yep.
He has, and we'll link that to a previous. Tell a bit of your story, I think.
Yeah.
The time we had you.
Yep.
This is Kyle Rice, and with him is his wife, Jessica.
Hi.
It's Jess, I think we go by, right?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You guys have some really wonderful news, if you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't you?
We actually haven't shared it publicly yet.
Oh, so.
Yeah, why not? This podcast.
This won't air for a few weeks anyway.
This is perfect.
It'll be safe. I don't know when we'll air it, actually, because I've got some other things to do, but
okay.
Go ahead.
So after 7 years of trying, and almost 7 years of trying, and you being told pretty much all your life that you weren't going to be able to have kids.
Yes.
We found out we're pregnant. And so,
So
now we get to enjoy that new adventure after we started fostering. We started fostering a teenager and then, 2 months later we found out you're pregnant?
Everybody says that as soon as you start fostering or as soon as you adopt, you get pregnant. And I would always say, Yeah.
And we should have fostered years ago, right? That's what you
were thinking. Yeah, we should have started with that. We would have started with that if we would have known.
Shoot, we were trying other techniques to get
pregnant.
Exactly.
I mean, all those specialists and everything, who needs them?
Yeah.
Just start fostering.
Well, so as soon as we got our 16-year-old kid, we got pregnant as well.
Ah. So somewhere around the first of the year, there'd be a new little rice in the world, end of December.
Yeah.
Wow. And I don't think we were as happy as you guys when we got the news, but Sarah and I were pretty happy because we've walked a bit of this journey with you guys, and we've just known your desire and the complications that were there and the disappointments. And
So
it's always great to hear. But I also know for a lot of people who've heard that, you know, as soon as you adopt or foster a kid, you'll get pregnant. There are lots of people that doesn't work for.
Yeah. Correct.
We know that wasn't the cause. And for those of you that tried that and been disappointed, you know, just somehow... You guys just kept it before God, and somehow we're here. So
yeah, that'd be so a fun conversation for another time.
But that's not why you're here, because you know, we don't announce every pregnancy here at the God Journey. Kyle's been up this before, but we've been talking to Kyle and Jessica, and I guess we just want to begin to let you guys know, who are faithful participants of the God Journey or live stream with us and what we do, that we're kind of going down a road of beginning a new partnership with you guys. And most of you know, or assume Sarah and I are in our mid-40s. We're not. We're in our late 60s. Let's say mid-60s, because that would be better and more accurate. But we always talk about what happens to LifeStream, what happens to the things that we do in the world when that comes to an end, when we finally say, you know, we can't keep doing web content and we can't keep doing those things, although we'll hang out with people and share the journeys with them as long as we can. But we've talked before, a long time we've held this before the Lord, about some point of maybe God incorporating you and Jess into what we do at LifeStream.
Yeah.
And we haven't hired them on full time or anything at this point. We're just launching a couple of ventures. One, I've got a new book we've been talking about for some time called The City.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished my part of that recently. We've got a little more editing to do, but we're pretty much done now and looking toward publication and trying to go, you know, some of the publishing world that there's a lot in the Christian publishing world, a lot of great people in that world. There's a lot of processes in it. This is driving me insane. And every time I talk to somebody about going down that road and, you know, get an agent and go through all these processes, it just came to my heart, maybe this would be something you guys would be interested in. We could take the same route we took with the Shack and start a publishing company and put this in the world and see. And you guys were excited about it from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've never done anything like that before.
Yeah, you have extensive publishing experience, both of you.
Yes, both of us.
Yeah.
What we went to school for.
You've got every bit as much as Brad did when we began Windblown, so you'd be fine that way. I've got a bit of experience in the industry. So we just want to introduce you to them. It's part of that publishing company, which we're going to go down that road now and get this book out as soon as we can. Also, The Language of Healing, which is a book we've recently finished as well. So I guess I'm being pretty productive these days.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff we're going to do. But Sarah and I just didn't want to end up with another business to manage. And we thought this would be a good way not only to start a publishing company, but also to help you guys find a way into serving with more time the passions that have been on your heart. And I guess that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
More than the publishing company, or, you know, helping at Livestream, doing some travel, maybe going to Kenya this summer with me to kind of sort out the things that are there. We'll go if we can work out things on that end. We're not sure that's going to work out time-wise for them, but we're moving that way. And we share, I guess, some very similar passions in ministry, right?
I would definitely agree with that, yeah.
I mean, just about the Lord and living in His love and helping people do that.
Yeah, and I think from different generations, because, I mean, my introduction to our even friendship was through your book, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And in my circle of friends and my circle of community, not going to a Sunday morning gathering wasn't an option. If you're going to be a faithful Christian, that's what you do. And then my supervisor in my clinical counseling program handed me this book called So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And I read it, and it put language around the things that had been going on in my heart for a long time. And I remember getting done with the book and going to my supervisor and being like, great. So that was completely disruptive. Now what do I do with it? Because I didn't know where to go from there.
So you called me or something, or sent me an email or something.
Michael Burgess.
Oh, that's right. Michael, we had a connection. Yep, yep. From St. Louis.
Yep. I called Michael and he said, funny you shouldn't mention it. I happen to know the author and he's only 45 minutes away from you. Let me give him a call.
This was how long ago? This was probably,
oh man,
7, 8 years ago, maybe longer.
Yeah. It was, were we married?
Yeah, we were married. Okay. So six, seven years ago.
6 years. You guys have been trying to get pregnant for 8. This is kind of interesting. I'm kidding. Always do the math. And that began this friendship.
Yeah.
And so why don't you give a little bit of your background, just so people, you've given a little bit, but
yeah,
more for both of you. So Kyle, you were on staff at a church for a while. You were with YWAM for a while. You've had an extensive resume of things you've been involved in.
Yeah, I've had quite a bit of different life experiences that I think have led to where I'm walking with God now. Started off in a very conservative Christian home, Baptist background. My father started out as a pastor in my younger years, then went back into ranching. So for the bulk of my younger life, whenever the church doors were open, I was there. But as time went on, yes, I still was still at all the different church events. However, there was a lot of anger, depression, different things going on internally. And so my Christian mask was very well developed, but it was just one of the masks that I wore. And there was a lot going on underneath it that I didn't really want other people to see. And then God took me through a variety of different life experiences, from going to college and at a secular university, and over 20 people on my floor of 40 were passionate believers. And I have a guy knock on my door the first day I'm there, and it's like, hey, I don't know what you believe about God, but we're going to be hanging out in the lobby. If you want to come and hang out with us, we're going to be playing some worship music and just hanging out if you want to join us. To meeting a person through the first generations of social media, and them telling me about this program in YWAM, and winding up in Australia to do a discipleship training school and doing ministry in Spain. And through all of that, God's really moved the conversation from this, I guess, sin management system, to a conversational dependency that has radically changed perspective and the way that I do life, the way that I enjoy people. I can't separate the two anymore. Like C.S. Lewis talked about the divine collision, where the Holy Spirit collides with your life in a way that no matter where you go, you'll never be the same, no matter what path you take. And that's been the case. It's been an incredible journey for about 12 years. Met my amazing wife in Los Angeles while I was doing a failed pastoral leadership internship, where I spent 2 years failing at a mega church. And that was God's very gracious way of disarming me from wanting to really succeed in the traditional Sunday morning gathering.
Is this before you read So Do You Go to Church Anymore? Or was this after?
This was before.
Before.
Okay. So
you can't blame me.
No.
I like that.
No, but I was
a lot of people blame me. You ruined my life.
No. I mean,
Jesus does that.
Life is still young, though. So you may still be involved in that ruining process. But
it's what I do best.
So the internship, I was doing this internship, and everywhere I went, I felt like I was hitting a brick wall in my success as a religious leader.
Good.
And yeah, I didn't view it as that at the time.
No, I hear you.
Right as I was ending that internship was when my supervisor while I was getting my master's degree handed me, "So you don't want to go to church anymore." So it was right when I was transitioning out of that internship. And it was very timely on God's behalf because it put language around stuff that I had been wrestling with for years, but just didn't have the words for.
Yeah.
But one of the great things about that internship is I met my wife, Jessica.
I kept trying to tell him that, but he didn't. It took him a little longer.
To come to that reality.
Yeah.
And ask you to marry him and then go on from there.
Mm-hmm. But I will say, though, that I did remember the first time we met. Versus my wife, who was telling our story, and
she can't remember the first time.
No, we'll talk about that later.
I see. Sarah and I both remember the first time we met. She thought I was a bit of a creep.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, but it was a homecoming banquet, and I was being a little irreverent for the occasion, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was sitting across the table from me, and I was with her first semester roommate on a date that wasn't going well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she goes, "Man, that guy's weird." And then she went out with me later. The rest is history. But. So, Jess, what about you? A longtime Californian, or where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Michigan.
Okay.
So, grew up in Michigan until I was about 17, moved to New York City on my own.
With the desire to?
Dance and do acting.
Okay.
So that was, I just always wanted to get out of Ann Arbor. I thought it was a small town.
Nothing against Ann Arbor.
Nothing against Ann Arbor at all. Yeah. Actually, I love Ann Arbor. I really do. Good. But when I was like 15, 16, I wanted to spread my wings.
Particularly if you want to get in the arts,
yes.
You know, stuff
yes.
to do that there.
Yep. Yeah. And so I thought that New York City was the place to go.
Yeah. And how long were you there?
I was moved to New York City, took a year off from school and just auditioned. And then I actually wasn't planning on going to college at all. My great aunt and uncle helped me kind of shift my opinion. They're like, "You really should, you know, consider doing something that will make you stand out, because there's a lot of people that want to be actors and dancers. And you know, the more that you can put on your resume, the better you're going to do." And so I auditioned at Rutgers University, and it was Mason Gross School of the Arts, and it was an acting conservatory where they only accepted 18 students in the whole country. And it was one of the first programs that you got to travel to London and study abroad, and for the entire year under Shakespeare's Globe Theater. And I was astonished that I got accepted. And so I was kind of in New York City for a year, and then moved back every summer because I didn't really have a home to go to. And then as soon as I graduated, I moved back into the city and was picked up by agents and started doing acting, theater, television, movies, commercials, and voiceovers. And then my manager wanted me to move to California. So I said, "Okay, why not?" Hmm. And there was a lot more that happened, you know, life, Yeah, so then I moved to California, and the rest is kind of history. But I was raised very differently than Kyle. Everything that he just said, think of the complete opposite. My parents were very non-spiritual.
Okay.
Well, they were spiritual. They were spiritual.
Just non-Jesus-y?
Yeah, okay.
Not Christianese.
Yeah.
Not Christianese.
We were more like maypole, you know, dancing around. Clothes, no clothes. You know, your kids.
Optional.
Sorry.
Okay.
Is that allowed? Who am I allowed to say?
This is a podcast for the God Journey, so let's keep it civil.
We can take that out, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to. It's hilarious.
Oh, man. Well, my parents are just, they're these beautiful human beings that just, my dad, he believes in all religions being one, and he does believe in God, but he goes to the Buddhist temple and will meditate for weekends at a time. And my mom was just a very hippie flower child, you know.
So, where did you meet Christ? Where did that?
My oldest sister. My oldest sister, she actually converted herself to Catholicism when she was 20. She got pregnant out of wedlock and everything. And in our growing up, that wasn't anything abnormal, but she wanted to shift her entire life around. And the only way that she knew how to do that was something drastic. And Catholicism has a lot of rules and not anything bad or good or anything like that, but it's just she needed some kind of change.
Had a lot of structure.
Yes, she needed a lot of structure. And my family, we weren't raised with any structure whatsoever. So, okay. So she actually started that path, and then slowly changed and just met Jesus and realized that Catholicism really wasn't her thing, but Jesus was. And so when I was in college, I didn't really have a relationship with any of my siblings or my family. And every Sunday for a year, she would just call me and tell me that I was loved. And I thought it was the weirdest thing. Cause I was like, where is this coming from? What's happening? You know? But it was actually really nice too. Cause college, when you're out on your own, it's nice to have somebody that is there to support you. And again, I didn't have that, or felt like I didn't have that for a while. And so then I started listening and recognizing what had changed in her life. And so she would talk to me more about like Christianity. And I thought she was a little crazy at first, but then slowly I started seeing the joy and the change and everything in her life. And I was like, I want that. What is that? Because I'm sad and feel empty and am doing things that I probably shouldn't do to fill this emptiness inside of me. And, you know, so I went through the whole path of like everything you shouldn't do to try to find fulfillment and joy, until I actually realized that I didn't need to do anything worldly for that. I could actually reach out and have a relationship with Jesus. And that actually changed my whole life.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And that's where your acting career just took off to the stratosphere.
Yeah, and I'm doing it right now. So.
You're acting here? What?
No. Well, that all changed too. But God has different...
That's been a frustrating... In more recent years, I mean, your desire to act and the opportunities to act...
Yeah.
Have not coincided well. As anybody breaking into the arts are just feast or famine, right? So they're all there. And
yes.
Some of that went away for you because you had some lines you wouldn't cross, as I understand it from our previous conversation.
That's correct. Yeah. So I actually was offered three different major roles that I turned down. My agency was not happy. My manager was very not happy.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do some of the things that the character and the script wanted me to do. And so I said no. And slowly that created less and less of an opportunity for me to get my foot in the door. I mean, I was able to book a lot of different things and actually make a living with it, but not in the capacity that I had always hoped or dreamed. But at the same time, my hopes and dreams have shifted too, once I realized, like, real hopes and real dreams, maybe.
And you still keep your toe in there a bit with some of the voiceover stuff, and you've done some commercial things. And
yes.
If we ever make the Jake movie, we're kind of hopeful maybe we could get a part for Jess.
Right.
We'll see.
I'm here.
Now I'll get 500 letters from all the other frustrated actors saying, hey, Bobby, yeah, too. We got that with The Shack for sure. But So we've known you guys for quite a while, and just have appreciated... hunger on your heart. I guess, Kai, we haven't got to a lot of your, And we mentioned some of the failed experiences.
Yeah.
But you were really involved at YWAM. You've got mm-hmm. a master's degree from Fuller Theological Seminary.
Actually, from Azusa.
Oh, Azusa.
From Azusa.
Yep. I thought you were Fuller.
No, I was an Azusa guy. Yep.
Must have been the other guy we meant to talk not to.
Do you want me to go now? No, he's standing you're outside.
You're fine. I can be wrong about that. It speaks well to your discernment, maybe. That was Azusa instead of. So, and then you came up here to Wyoming a few years back to do some internship in the counseling area, mm-hmm. which was big for you.
Yep.
And then you end up working at a college, and now you're teaching high school kids in Nebraska.
I am. Now I'm a guidance counselor and a volleyball coach. It's been interesting how God has just continued to give me opportunities to live out the threads of passion that he's placed in my life. So being able to help people have conversations about what it means to be alive, what it means to walk with God, what does it mean to find abundant life, whether that is in a Christian context or in a secular context. It's been really interesting how God has continued to give me avenues to have those conversations with people, whether it be on the mountainside with a college age student or a teenager when we're doing the guiding stuff, or living alongside of college students for 3 years gives you access to have conversations with people about what it means to be alive and their value systems and what does conversational intimacy with Christ look like. You want to talk about giving people access to your life. Try living alongside of 200 teenagers, for better or for worse. I mean, they saw us in our sweatpants. They saw us right.
Yeah, and living
fight,
alongside was in the dorm, not just visiting to do official duties.
Yes, literally living in the building with the students.
You walk in with the students.
Yep.
In fact, I lived there for a couple of days.
You did,
with you guys. So I was in the dorm as well.
Surprised a few of our students too.
But didn't like me in sweatpants or
what? No. After the Shaq episode, because Wayne, we were riding to the movie and you were going to do an after show conversation with the people who were there watching it.
Yep.
But you didn't happen to mention that you were going to be doing that. And so we're riding down to the movie with several of the volleyball players and they're talking about recruiting and plays and drama in their life and stuff. And then they were freaking out on the way home because, well, why didn't you tell us who you were? And why didn't you announce that you were the person who helped with the movie?
Because I like traveling stealth in the world.
Absolutely.
You really get to know people when they don't have a clue who you are and they're just being themselves. And once they figure out, oh, you're the guy that wrote this or would. And I face that when I travel. I'm always looking to get beneath the whole Wayne Jacobson, the author guy, and get down to just a brother and what's your life like. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've enjoyed this relationship for years. We were sad when you guys moved away, but we've managed to stay in touch through it.
Yeah.
And now just like God's opening a door for some of the passions that you hold in your heart, which are, both of you, incredibly similar to the things in mine in terms of teaching people to live loved.
Yeah.
What I love about this is I think this opens the door to, as you said, a different generation. You guys are in your mid-30s.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Young 30s.
Yep.
Real passion for millennials. I don't like those terms and how they separate generations, but there's some validity to them.
It's language for conversation.
Yeah. And man, I one of the themes of the city, it's a minor theme, but it's there, that a new generation needs to take on a sense of what it is to live in the reality of Father's affection and communicate that to the world more effectively than my generation has, or even the generation just beneath us. And that has brought our passions together to say, man, I, at this stage in my life, I would really enjoy helping reshape that message to get to a younger audience that wants to be engaged with a God who's real, who captures our heart, who changes the way I think and thus the way I live in the world. And you read The City.
Yeah.
You enjoy it a little bit?
Oh, it was... I'm sorry, listeners, because I know I've been a listener to his podcast as well and have heard him talk about The City and have been very frustrated because I've been anticipating this book. And when I had the opportunity to read it, it was absolutely incredible. And I think it drew to the surface of my heart a longing that a book hasn't done in a long time.
Hmm.
And just being able to, as I'm reading through this and as feel like God's even highlighting times that he and I have shared in my life with him. And as I'm reading this book and being like, oh man, I wish I could have an experience like that. Or why can't God be like that? Or are you like that, God? You know, and then he would just be, oh, well, remember that time, or remember that time, or, and still a longing for more. But there was just these cool moments where he was highlighting memories of my relationship with him, where it's like, oh yeah, you are engaging with our world like that. And you are walking alongside of your children like that. And so that's just been, that was just a really interesting experience. I don't want to give it away too much, but
yeah, don't give away anything. Fortunately, we're talking about, but we're much closer to it being available to the rest of you.
Yeah.
Hopefully early this fall, we'll have the capacity to get that out. We're kind of, now that we're done with the major restructuring of it, the lead author is a housewife from France, and she had this manuscript written in French, had it translated, sent to me. And I was engaged by the story, but also it needed some help. Mm-hmm. And so I was hoping to coach her into helping that, but the language barriers. And she just said, you know, I really want you to reshape this book. And I feel like it's a gift to you as much as it was to me. And so here we go again. You know, it's a book that's deeply entrenched in her family history, wanted me to reshape it. And I'm looking at going down a road that I've been down before that didn't end well the first time.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some similar traits here to some previous life experiences you've had. Are your thoughts as you're stepping down this road again?
Don't think I don't know that. And we've had extensive conversations to make sure we avoid whatever misunderstandings we had last time. And I'm not even sure what those are, because we've never had the conversation that lets us know what that is.
Yeah.
But I've also come to the same point I did early on with the previous book, and that was, you know, I think this story needs to be in the world. And if in getting it in the world, I get stomped on, and I really don't fear it this time. I didn't fear it last time either. But even if that's the cost of it, it's worth my time and effort to help this story find its way in the world. Because I think it's an excellent primer. What I was going to talk about earlier, one of the minor themes, is that maybe in this day and age, as the world advances in the darkness we seem to be in some parts of the world's life, that God would more quickly raise up a new generation, a younger generation, a people not so schooled in the dictates of religion, and be able to grasp what it is to live inside the kingdom. And I think that's what this book is. It teaches people how to live in the kingdom, how to live in the realities that we know in our head and our heart, and we can quote with, you know, real passion, and yet not know how to live just in the real situations, engagements, and people in my life. Yeah. So I think it's a real primer for that. I've said about this book, it engaged my heart in the same way the Shack engaged my mind. And it has changed things in me and the way I live. Just the reading of the first manuscript and then being able to, I've been inside of it now for about 6 months, rewriting, adding dialogue, kind of reshaping the story so that it kind of got to a better end point. And Claire, the author, Keller Gallison, has been part of that with me. Every bit of it she's seen and responds to, and some things we've had to go back and redo because she didn't like the way it came out. So really been working hard to serve her, at the same time get a story in the world that will excite people. And then that came to how we're going to publish it, which came to brought me back to something we've talked about a long time ago. And that is, if I were to, you know, want LifeStream to continue, and I don't want LifeStream to continue or the God Journey as some kind of memorial to Wayne Jacobson or Brad Cummings in the sense of the God Journey, but I've had a real passion to just say, if this is a valuable tool that someone else can take, and I can't imagine putting it in anybody else's hands but yours, plural, both of you. And so we're just going down that road. We haven't committed to anything here. We haven't, we've committed to, let's walk down this road together and see where it ends. And Jess has had a vast experience as administrative assistant. Is that the title you held, or more than that?
Executive assistant
to a very high-powered executive. She's done that for years. Very skilled in administrative things. And so she bring that gift into it, as well as her passion, which she shares with her husband, for all things spiritual.
Yeah.
And we're going to explore, while we're kind of starting this publishing company, and maybe that's a way to help release you from some of the daily responsibilities you carry in the secular world, to make your gift more available in the world, to help equip others. Because I think we need that. We need a younger audience. And it just seems like most of the people grabbing the microphone these days belong to people in my generation. Mm. And we need spokespeople back to younger ages, I think.
Well, we were actually, some of my friends that are in a similar conversation that we are, similar age group that we are, that Jess and I are.
Yeah. We are not.
Jess and I are.
I'm twice your age, man. I could be your dad or your grandpa or something.
No, we won't go into that.
I don't mind. What did you say earlier today? You said decades and decades.
Well, I didn't want to use the word millennia, so, you know.
I was probably born in a different millennia. Well, you were born in the same millennia.
That is true. Yep. No, I think we were just having this conversation about why are there not voices.
With some of your friends.
My friends and I were having this conversation about why are there not younger voices that are dialoguing about this conversational intimacy with Christ. I mean, we talked about the people who had really mentored us or influenced us. And the general age group was mid-50s to 70s, 80s, and some of them had already passed away and are from previous generations. And so we were really wrestling with that. Why are the spokespeople or the voices, the people with the bullhorns that are...
Hey, no bullhorns.
Putting this out to us.
It's a bad idea.
why is the voice that older generation? Like who is the spokesperson for our generation? Why is that?
Or people. Spokespeople.
Correct.
Yeah.
Spokespeople.
And what'd you guys come up with? Why?
Part of it is that life process and learning to walk with God and learning to live in His love takes time, especially as a millennial, living in a generation where we kind of were on the cusp between the instant gratification generation that is growing up now and the generation before that. I still experienced listening to radio broadcasts in the morning after I came in from work, and I still experienced record players. And wow. I had my cassette player.
Not as young as you think.
Absolutely. But it takes time. You can't just manufacture that. You can't speed up the value of walking with God through months and years and decades of life experience. So that's part of it. Yeah. And I think the other part of it is that, you know, honestly, I think there's some discrediting of, oh, the millennial generation. You know, what do they know? Or they haven't even had enough time on this earth to have lived life to be worth listening to. Some of that, I don't think a ton of that, but there's definitely some of that. I remember sitting on the plane next to an executive as I was flying to California, and she was reading an article about millennials. And, you know, being a millennial, being a counselor, I was like, oh, what did you think of that article? And she's like, oh, that millennial generation, I can't stand them. Hmm. And she's like, I'm a CEO and I try to hire all these people in and they're unreliable. They're not well-trained. They're entitled.
They're 34, still living in their parents' basement.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the stereotype of it.
Absolutely.
That's not true for me. It certainly wasn't true for you guys.
No.
Or most people you know, right? In
Correct.
Your generation. Yeah. So
Correct.
That gets to be a stereotype.
Yes.
And that they shirk responsibility, they blah, blah, blah. But when I travel around, I meet a lot of millennials that people in that age bracket that don't fit the stereotypes at all.
Right.
So.
And I think that's, you know, not getting too much down that road, but I think that is consistent with every generation. As you're looking at the next generation coming on, you're like, oh man, they're going to be a mess. Like our world is doomed. It's all going to all fall apart. But back to your question about, you know, where is the voice or re-engaging a younger generation? I mean, you've even done some work about the mass exodus of people from the Sunday morning gathering. And a lot of that has been pointed towards millennials, that they're one of the least church generations in our culture today. Hmm. And yet the passion for authentic spirituality, I think, saturates the conversations that this generation is having. Hmm. Even as I was doing my graduate work, they were talking about how even in secular mainstream counseling and therapy, they can't get away from the fact that all these researchers and professional psychologists are beginning to see the value and the depth of, yeah, there is a spiritual dynamic to our world. And if we ignore that in the therapeutic process, then we're doing our clients a disservice. Hmm. And so it's not that millennials aren't having conversation about spirituality or about relationship with God. Yes, there's been a mass exodus in a lot of regards from
the religious
traditional
side,
religion.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But a longing for an authenticity of, I know that there's an opportunity to walk with God. I know that there's a God out there that is engaging with my world and engaging with my life. And how do I figure out who he is? How do I find out what it means to live life with Christ? If the traditional ways, like for me, the traditional ways that I was taught to do that was you go to church, you go to a small group, you go to seminary, and then you know how to walk with God. And yet I was so disoriented by that because most of my primary life-altering experiences with Christ were not at a Sunday morning gathering. Yeah. They were in the mountains. They were in a conversation with friends. They were in a counseling session. They were on a backpacking trip. They were flying on an international flight and just having a conversation with the person sitting next to me. And I wind up walking off a plane saying, God, my life is never going to be the same. And
don't you think with that has come the rejection of the God of my generation, the religious God of being judgmental and angry and have to have society shaped its way? There's a lot of hostility, mm-hmm. I think, in a younger generation that view of God is not engaging.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. I mean, I'm not arguing for that view of God at all,
yeah.
But that's the God that somehow the religious political right mix of things has really turned off a generation. But
yeah.
What I would add to the conversation, you say, is why there aren't younger voices. I think why there's so many from my generation is that as God began to bring us to the end of our religious ways, many of us who had that passion were in quote unquote ministry jobs. Hmm. And then when we were found ourselves outside of those or no longer willing to use our life to support the machinery, then it was always, well, what do we do? You know, it would form networks, form communities, write books, do a speaking thing. It became the way that a generation of people who thought they were aimed for pastoral ministry end up trying to influence the world. And
yeah.
I think that's why from the younger ones coming up who have a similar passion to God but didn't go the traditional route of working up the ladder of religion,
mm-hmm.
or trying to, and there are some in your age group, obviously trying to build big congregations with
yeah.
the same passion that some of my generation did.
Yep.
But I think these people are talking about God raising up a new generation of young people, 20s and 30s, 40s, who have enough life experience. I remember at 25, leaving the church I was on staff, well, 27, going to go plant a new church. And we had an answer for all the church ills that had existed in the last in the last 2,000 years. And also the passion of don't let anyone despise your youth. And I look back at the arrogance of my life at 27. And some of it was godly. Some of it God was stirring in me. A big part of it was how Wayne's ego reinterpreted that into his hopes and dreams of being significant and being a voice. And that, then read 15 years of absolute frustration trying to be what I thought I ought to be in a context in which it didn't fit.
Yeah.
And I think now, I've always said, I think ministry, which I don't like those terms, I'm using air quotes for ministry, begins when you're 16, 17, 18, you commit yourself to full-time Christian service, you go away and you prep it for a career, and then you end up at 23, 24, 25 in a church with reverend on your door, and you have zero life experience. You have a lot of academic knowledge, but zero life experience. And how in the early church it seemed to be those elders that were most helpful were people that had grown up, raised families, had jobs, you know, demonstrated a transformational life just in the reality of the world.
Yeah.
And then God invited them to be part of something bigger. And I think I'm hopeful. It'd be interesting to see where this relationship goes and what doors God opens.
Yeah.
In allowing you and I to maybe find language that gets to maybe find places, spaces in which to speak to a generation. And we have zero plan strategy for how to do this. You know,
yeah.
The best things in my life have unfolded. God's put a desire in my heart. I've held it before him in prayer. And then a door opens that you weren't even expecting or looking for. And then you head down that door and you find that God's prepared a space for you.
Yeah.
Rather than we've got to strategize. We're going to try and build a movement. We're not going to do any of that stuff. I'm not going to do that stuff. We're just going to take this message of living loved and helping people connect with a real conversation with the creator of their heart and soul, mm-hmm. and help equip people to do that and see if there's ways to pass that on to a younger generation, particularly as our generation moves on in years.
Yeah.
And who's picking up the opportunity. We've even talked about when we're walking over here from lunch about, you know, having a retreat next summer or something. We'd bring together some of these 35 to 45 who are doing regular jobs, raising kids, whatever, but feel like God's given them a passion to speak his life into the world.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. I think the publishing company is a way, if it's like windblown, that opened so many doors for Brad that just were not open before. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea what that would be. And now I felt that this is something that God wants to share with you guys. And so what Claire has shared with me and some other people, I'm going to share with you and just see where God takes that in our life. So we're kind of at the end of the podcast time-wise, but man, I'm excited to see where this goes. The reason I wanted to introduce people to you, because you're going to see these people's names, Jess and Kyle, around Lifestream and God Journey. We're going to be talking more. Not that Kyle at this point is replacing Brad. We haven't decided that.
Yeah.
Julie's in on these conversations. I got some other people to share with you. So I'm not sure how that God Journey is sorting out. Brad and I are still great friends, even though our lives are, it's not easy for us to get together these days because our schedules just don't overlap well like they used to. And we don't know what God's changing there. We're talking about it. We've enjoyed some podcasts with Julie, and it's fun to have you guys on today. And just to introduce you guys and just to let people know, this will be part of our conversation if you're kind of involved in some of Lifestream God Journey kind of stuff. And we're going to see where it goes.
Looking forward to it.
Sounds crazy, doesn't it? You're going to keep your job. So you're going to still teach. And Jess is going to start doing some administrative stuff for Lifestream because Sarah's wanted to step back a bit and spend more time with grandkids and gardens and things she loves. So we're helping Sarah do that, and our board's committed to helping Jess kind of step into that role. So you may be getting email from Jess and from other people on Lifestream's behalf, and you know who she is now. They're living in Wyoming still, so they'll be up here. We're going to be in California, but this age of technology allows for that crazy stuff to happen.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll be glad to have you guys around. Looking forward to it.
Well, and thank you for this, too, because you said earlier that we just really believe that this is truly a gift, a really just incredible gift, and you guys are amazing. So,
thank you. Thank you for your friendship.
I'm glad we had that on tape, because, you know, 2 years from now, we're going to remember.
We play that back.
Because I'm sure there'll be hard times. There was hard times in what Brad and I did together with Windblown, and there'll be difficult times here, too, but...
Yeah.
The reality of saying, gosh, I see the passion of your heart. It's light. And you've expressed that in all the relationships and ways that you guys live. It's fabulous. I do think God just wants to open up just a little bit bigger opportunity for it. And we're going to see where it goes. It's all going to be up to him anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, it will be.
Well, we're going to break off the podcast right there. We stayed on and talked longer about Game of Thrones, actually. I know some of you think it's a reprehensible piece of television and wouldn't watch it, don't have the freedom to or the desire to. We kind of avoided it for most of the run. Over the last year, though, some of our friends, last season, actually, some of our friends were talking about it. So Sarah and I thought, well, we'll give it a shot. It's a brutal piece of TV. It's nearly pornographic in places. And it's so other people would say, gosh, anybody watches that's horrible, shouldn't watch it. You haven't watched it. Completely understand that. But we had some conversation about it. We're going to include it at the bottom of the podcast. If you want to listen to that part of it, you can go to the podcast page, thegodjourney.org, find the podcast with Jess and Kyle. And down in the podcast notes, you're going to find a link to click on if you want to listen to our discussion of Game of Thrones. If not, no problem. See you next week.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.